Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Kathy Kelly. Kathy is a longtime political, social, anti-war activist. She is the coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Its original name was Voices in the Wilderness. Kathy travels to the hot spots of the world. She visited Iraq many, many times during the war, the 2003 war, back in the 1990s. She was very active in initiatives to confront the horrendous sanctions that took so many lives of innocent Iraqis. She just returned from Afghanistan. She's been to Afghanistan a number of times recently, I believe, but she just returned in the recent days from Afghanistan, and we want to talk about the situation there and the things that she saw, things that are important to listeners. You don't get too many reports about Afghanistan these days other than the supposed withdrawal of U.S. troops, but it'll never be 100% withdrawal. America wants to keep its clutches on the country and exploit the country and exploit its resources and exploit its people. It's a horrendous situation. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, it's great to have you on. I had to delay it through no fault. Well, your schedule and my my situation delayed my getting you on, but we finally got together, and I'm delighted to do it. Well, you've been on before. I certainly hope this will not, there'll be many more times that you'll come on as well. But talk about your trip to Afghanistan and the things you saw and what concerns you.
Well, in a way, I see Afghanistan through a keyhole. I had been joined by two other Westerners at different points during a seven-week stay, and I had said, now be ready for a very claustrophobic experience. You may barely be able to leave the house, because we're never sure to what extent it might be endangering for Westerners to be in a certain area. The truth is the Afghan peace volunteers move in Kabul once every 6 months for security reasons primarily. So this time the moves were certainly working in my favor. We had established a new community, a women's live-in community, and so I lived there. It was a lovely spot, really, primitive in some ways. There was no running water inside the house, so an outdoor latrine, and we did laundry and dishes outside of where we met for our meals and took our rest and slept overnight and studied and met. But it was a beautiful spot with a lovely garden right in the middle of what they call a yard. And the young men lived not far away. And then every morning in both communities, people would walk 35 minutes through a part of Kabul that is a working class area, but really almost more like a village, to a place called the Border Free Center. And there, the kinds of meetings that have characterized the Afghan peace volunteers for a long time, meetings of other people doing different kinds of peacemaking work. There aren't a lot of these kinds of groups, but there are some. Meetings for different classes. A very interesting class as the students become older now in global awareness once a week and conflict resolution once a week and nonviolent communication, and a course to prepare some to go to India and learn from young activists in India. This was all happening, but there was much more fear and anxiety. In part, of course, we needed to act in deference to our neighbors' mores and values, complete separation of the sexes, so that you know, boys couldn't walk girls home unless it was a brother of one of the young women. A young man couldn't come into the place where the young women lived. There can't be any text messaging between young men and women. But what I think is of great, great fear for the young people is that in the case of one young man, it's now 2 years since he's been able to go and visit his family because the fighting is so intense in his province, the Maidan Wardak area. Our young friend, I won't name her name, but her colleague was beheaded as she was traveling on a mission to do human rights work. And of course, she's deeply traumatized by this. It had happened just last winter.
I think it's important to point out also, Kathy, that America's war, and it absolutely is America's war on Afghanistan, a nation that posed America no threat whatsoever. So the war was an illegal war of aggression, and it's easily America's longest war. And it's worse than that, because unless America pulls out entirely, and there are no plans to do that, this war could go on for another decade. My goodness, it could go on forever, as long as there are American forces there. And you could talk about the Taliban or anybody else, but basically I think probably the majority of Afghan people, they want their country back. They don't want to, be occupied by a foreign force that has license to go out and do anything it wants, to kill Afghans, to continue this war interminably, and to cause such utter misery for millions of Afghan people. And this has gone on for so long. And before America showed up, Kathy, Afghanistan really was plagued by war just year after year after year. Probably no people in modern times have suffered more. There are plenty of people who have suffered plenty for so long. The Haitian people, the Iraqi people, you can name plenty of them. But you could go back decades and decades and decades, and the Afghans have just suffered so horrendously. And all Afghans living have never, every one of them, have never known a moment of peace.
So the rates of mental illness, along with, of course, the physical stresses that go with that, are quite high, with over half of the population estimated to be experiencing severe depression. The rates of suicide amongst women are alarmingly high. These factors also affect the people, of course, with whom I was living. It's also a country that ranks number one on the list of the most corrupt countries in the world, according to the analysis of its own population. And this kind of corruption, which is endemic, has, of course, been fed by the pouring of billions of dollars into Afghanistan, but without the kinds of safeguards that would assure that even a substantial portion of that money would reach the people who couldn't feed their families or didn't have access to clean water or couldn't get health care. So $100 billion, we're now approaching a sum of $100 billion in non-military aid went to Afghanistan. And someone as respected as Anatole Levin of the New York Review of Books has said that, in a sense, we were subsidizing the Taliban, because so much of that money is used for payoffs and bribes so that the Taliban and other armed groups wouldn't attack the surging numbers of vehicles delivering supplies to the U.S. troops. So to keep one U.S. troop in Afghanistan over the past year has cost $2.1 million per soldier. It would have cost a nickel, 5 cents, to get enough salt into the diet of a starving Afghan child. Now, which do we think U.S. people are going to want to put their resources toward? It was very clear that the emergency hospital workers, now these are staff from a network of three major hospitals and about 43 clinics, substantial clinics, that are all over Afghanistan, that they say there's a full-blown war going on in Afghanistan. Because they're stitching people up on the ground who are the victims, and they don't ask questions, they don't discriminate. They're very well respected for their neutrality. But I think as a face-saving device, the United States hasn't wanted to report that in spite of these long years of war, the Taliban still control about 70% of the country. Also, our young friends want us to understand that there's no such thing as the people of Afghanistan or the Taliban. There are many, many different Taliban groups. There are many different warlords and drug lords and sometimes just criminal gangs, all of whom are like piranhas going after resources because they can see there will be limited resources in the future. So the situation is very bleak. So many people, if they could get out, they want to get out because, of course, they're desperate and tired of all this war. But I was impressed by how well able to analyze the situation my young friends were, and they see the direct connection between warfare and corruption. Families experience war, they're deeply traumatized, they become desperate, and so everyone that can put aside or grab some money for themselves, for their family, is, of course, sorely, sorely tempted to do this. And then when the United States pours money into groups like the Afghan local police, and I'd have to ask listeners to understand that I'm not speaking of police forces so much as a network of local armed militias that were part of General David Petraeus's his counterintelligence strategy. He believed that that's what each district-level area needed, just a group of well-armed, basically strong men who would be part of a very grassroots organization to fight on behalf of the United States. But it didn't work out that way. A lot of these well-armed strong men, if you will, felt they weren't paid well enough, and so they started, maybe sometimes in desperation, excising a tax from the local people. Or maybe they would just say, well, forget this. We're going to turn ourselves over to another armed group and work with them. It was more of a mercenary kind of development. So this has been strongly criticized, and it's been listed as one of the major reasons for disgruntlement and discontent and maybe even support of the Taliban in various provinces throughout Afghanistan. The idea that the United States, by committing so much violence, could establish security for anyone is a preposterous notion, and we're going to be fed the same notion recycled again with regard to Iraq as well as Afghanistan.
Oh, we absolutely are. On the one hand, I'm not surprised, and on the other hand, it is really shocking that we are now in our third Iraq war, Kathy, since January 1991, and who knows where this will lead. There were hundreds of U.S. Special Forces sent in to, supposedly provide humanitarian aid. America doesn't give a damn about humanitarian aid. America cares about controlling a country, its resources, exploiting its people, and so on. And the nominal reasons for going to war are certainly not the real reasons. And, of course, in the case of Iraq, you've got all that oil. It's a very major, major resource that America wants control over. In the case of Afghanistan, it's very strategically located. In one respect, it's a land-based aircraft carrier targeting Russia, and it's also more resource-rich than most people realize. So Washington wants U.S. corporations to get first crack at developing Afghanistan's resources whenever they get around to doing that, and so many other things. But and civilians always suffer most, Kathy, as you know. You've seen the effects firsthand in Afghanistan and Iraq. It's just horrendous. I've never been there, so I can't possibly understand what you understand from having seen it and lived through it. You were there through shock and awe in 2003 in Iraq, weren't you?
I was, and I was also there in 1991. And so really, Stephen, the longest war in U.S. history has been in Iraq. And I think it's important to say that because now Iraq is coming back into our vision. As you say, a third war, maybe much of the Iran-Iraq war could be attributed to the United States having supplied both sides with weapons. But we really are seen, of course, by other countries as a menacing, fearful country that will do whatever it takes to maintain our empire of control over other people's resources. But it's so hard for people in this country to see it because we're fed the big lie. I mean, we get it from so many directions and again that, well, we're so needed and what would people do without us to protect them? And aren't we the ones that bring security in the face of these terrible people who behead others and who will rape and pillage? And so it's very, very complicated because I think that it's impossible for any average person to try to know all of the necessary details and background for every single conflict in which the United States is a major, major, source and exacerbation.
Oh, indeed, Kathy. Unless people take the trouble to go online to use alternative sources for real information, which are very readily available, and you really don't need that much time to do it. I mean, people turn on their television sets by rote, and they think they're getting real news, and all they do is they get carpet bombed cable channels around the clock with big lies, one of my favorite expressions. And a lot of intelligent people simply don't understand what's really going on, and you could pick any of the hot spots of the world, and the propaganda that drowns out the hard truths, it just continues. I mean, it is shocking and disgusting. And the situation in Iraq, we're getting misinformed about why America went back to Iraq. They have no idea that ISIL or ISIS or the Islamic State, as they call themselves, is a U.S. creation and being used as a U.S. ally in Syria, while in Iraq it's a U.S. enemy. So you've got an allied and enemy status going on simultaneously. People don't realize that. America doesn't give a damn how many Syrians the Islamic State fighters behead. I mean, they support these people. They train them. They train them in Jordan. They literally train U.S. Special Forces, CIA, training the Islamic State fighters in Jordan to go into Syria to wage war against the Syrian government. And this stuff goes on. The carpet bombing of big lies about Ukraine right now. This is such a big issue for me, Kathy. I write nearly daily about Ukraine. But it is obvious to anybody who does minimal research that Russia is the good guy in this conflict, and America and its rogue NATO allies are the bad guys. And, of course, the Kiev government is totally illegitimate, a coup d'etat government, neo-Nazi-infested fascists run it, a proxy government for Washington to do its bidding, to be a dagger pointed at the heart of Russia. And yet most people, again, even intelligent people, think the opposite is the truth, which it is not.
I think that many people have grown accustomed to looking for simpler answers because it does seem so complicated when people lack language and they lack feedback from people they know and trust. And so people do look for cartoonized versions of foreign policy, but that's never, ever the way it works. And so one of the things we need to keep on encouraging people to do is to do exactly what you said, really try to understand a lot about even one small place in this global and interconnected system of violence that goes on, and to find people whose accounts we can trust. I mean, that's one thing I've valued very, very much about the Afghan peace volunteers. They suffer from the memories, the trauma, the mental illness, I suppose, that the rest of the country is bearing. And they also certainly have been affected by the levels of corruption. It's a difficult country in which to grow up. But they nevertheless have refused to give in to retaliation or revenge or a desire to acquire vast personal wealth, even though they now have, you know, connections beyond Afghanistan, which would be craved by young people their age. They haven't tried to manipulate those to, you know, bring about wealth for themselves or their families. Anyway, they wouldn't be able to find it with the kind of people that we are. But this, I think, becomes very, very important to try to find people who will tell their stories and can be trusted. And certainly it's always important to try to understand what's happening amongst women. And again, the way in which the United States has been willing to manipulate statistics about the conditions of women and make it seem as though the United States improved the conditions of women and children is very, very reprehensible. In fact, the likelihood of people experiencing malnourishment, of not being able to get past illiteracy and domestic violence or being trapped inside of their homes and sold off in early marriages, this is still, according to the young women that I talked with all summer long, the most severe problem that Afghanistan faces.
And the children, of course, Kathy, always suffer so much. The trauma they go through, the stunted growth, the lack of nutrition. You could go on and on. The basics that anybody needs to grow up in a healthy environment, they're non-existent in Afghanistan. So a generation of Afghan children, literally, my goodness, I don't want to use the word destroyed, but they'll have much shorter lives than they deserve, and the lives they have will be plagued by illness and all kinds of other problems, the trauma. I mean, growing up in a war zone with nothing but war, not knowing when you get up in the morning, when you get up and see the sun rise, whether you'll live long enough to see it set at the end of the day. And this is all America's fault. America has a permanent war policy, and unfortunately, Afghanistan is very much a part of it. And it goes on and on and on. And only once in a while do I write an article about Afghanistan, Kathy. It's been a little while since I've done it. I certainly will again. But you could pick any of these hot spots, and you could see the enormous harm that America brings on the people who live there, and the fact that most Americans just seem to go about their daily lives unaware of such misery this country inflicts on others, and the fact that the money that they pay in taxes, instead of going for social services to benefit them and their families, which is what it should be used for, it's used for war making, for killing and destruction and so on. And if people put their minds around a thought like that, maybe there'd be a little bit more activism against the war situations around the world. We remember the Vietnam protest, Kathy. I dream of something like that happening again, but we're certainly not seeing it.
Well, you know, one thing I was very, very impressed with is the growth, really, in Kabul of a small program, but it's gone on now for 3 years. And it has to do with trying to help kids who are among the 600,000 child laborers in Afghanistan more or less get off the streets, retire early, and stop polishing shoes or selling tissue paper. You know, kids are cute when they're 8, 9, and 10 and they're doing that. But as they grow into young teenagers, they become very valuable to criminal rings, criminal gangs, who can try to bring the girls into prostitution or try to bring the boys into drug networks or both. Anyway, these youngsters are invited by the Afghan peace volunteers to stop working on the streets, to go to school, to come for classes in their language and in math, and to learn some maybe more organized habits, to get some warm clothing for winter, some clean clothing for school. And every month they leave the Border Free Center with a huge sack of rice and a big container of oil. These little tiny tykes are carrying it, or the girls have to ask their older brothers to come. And the Afghan peace volunteers, when they get their hands on resources, they share. And I'm very, very glad to see that kind of sharing going on, and also revving up for the Duvet Project, which involves stuffing coverlets with adequate wool so that when you sew them up, there'll be a good insulation, a good buffer against the freezing cold that will be coming in the wintertime. So, yes, I encourage people not to pay taxes to the United States government. I haven't paid since 1980. I can't and I won't. I encourage people to be involved in nonviolent civil disobedience and take a cue from the very brave people. I mean, actually, there was a nonviolent civil disobedience movement going on in Iraq, of all places, a kind of an Occupy movement. It wasn't perfect. Mm-hmm. Some of it was being manipulated by others, but you could go to Peace News and read a very interesting August commentary behind the Iraqi crisis, the crushing of the nonviolent Sunni uprising. We heard so little of these groups that were in tent encampments and really hoped that they might be able to use a nonviolent network to force the U.S.-supported Iraqi government to start giving them a stake and let them become shareholders in the future of that society.
Oh, I knew nothing about that, Kathy.
43 people were killed in Hawija up near Kirkuk. I remember being with a young Iraqi woman and her face just filled with misery. And I should have paid so much more attention to what she was telling me. But I also started to think, well, I don't really know who's all behind this. But that was the movement to pay attention to. It was a nonviolent Sunni uprising in northwestern Iraq that ran from December 2012 to December 2013. So these are, we ought not give up hope on the possibility that nonviolence can save the world. It can and it should. We shouldn't give up hope on the people that will be engaging in civil disobedience on the 21st of September in New York City. There will be a big march, but then there will be nonviolent civil disobedience the next day to campaign against global warming and climate change. All of us can do something, of course.
All of us can indeed do something, Kathy, and you and I are absolutely 100% like-minded. And it's up to us, Kathy, and if enough people decide they want to do something and they sustain their activism, and we both believe in nonviolence, anything is possible, and it certainly has happened in America before. What happened before can happen again. It happens in other countries. But sitting around wishing for it isn't going to get anything done. Kathy, I think we have a little over a minute left. Anything more of importance you want to pass on to listeners?
Well, I think the issue of drones being used again in this horrible slaughter in Gaza is an issue we should also pay attention to. How many attacks were carried out by weaponized drones, and what does that proliferation mean? I'm going to go to court October 2nd regarding the use operation of drones out of Whiteman Air Force Base, and the general penalty for crossing the line there has been, for someone with my record, 6 months in prison. So I don't take such a step lightly, but I do believe that the exceptionalism of the United States is something that is bringing the whole world into great, great levels of danger. And thinking of how much I've been blessed with by having such an abundant access to the goods and the comforts of this world.
Absolutely, Kathy. We are out of time, and I would just close the program by adding, I don't know anybody, you personally, Kathy, who has put your body in harm's way for what's right, fighting the great wrongs mostly committed by our country. I don't know of anybody who's been more courageous doing this than you. Kathy, I look forward to getting you back again and continuing this discussion. I'm sure you've got more trips planned. Many, many thanks, Kathy, for coming on.
Thanks, Stephen. Take good care. Bye-bye.